Welcome back to NaraCast Tech Briefing. I'm your host, and with me, as always...
Hello, everyone.
We've got a packed show today. We're going to dive into a pretty stark warning from Mitchell Hashimoto about what he's calling AI psychosis in the engineering world.
Yes, and we'll also be looking at a sophisticated zero-click exploit chain targeting the Pixel 10, courtesy of Google's Project Zero.
Plus, we'll talk about how developers are literally writing middleware to protect their AI coding agents from bloated terminal output. Let's get right into it. So our first story today comes from a post by Mitchell Hashimoto, the founder of HashiCorp, on May 15th, 2026. And he didn't mince words. He said, quote, "I strongly believe there are entire companies right now under heavy AI psychosis, and it's impossible to have rational conversations about it with them."
AI psychosis is a heavy term, but he defines it very specifically. He's talking about this emerging engineering culture where teams become overly reliant on AI agents. They start adopting this mindset of mean time to recovery is all you need. They're essentially saying that mean time between failures doesn't matter anymore. Who cares if the system crashes every hour, as long as the AI can bring it back online in 2 seconds?
Right. The idea that it's perfectly fine to ship broken code to production, because if something breaks, your AI agent can just instantly read the logs, find the bug, and push a fix in seconds. It's a seductive idea for management, because it looks like incredible velocity.
Which sounds great on paper, if you're only looking at local metrics. You know, bug reports get closed fast, test coverage might look superficially good, but Hashimoto warns that this approach creates what he calls resilient catastrophe machines.
I love that phrase, resilient catastrophe machines. It's like the system is constantly self-healing on a micro level, but on a macro level, the architecture is just rotting.
Exactly. Because you lose the human semantic understanding of the system. If an AI is constantly patching holes with duct tape, eventually your entire code base is just duct tape. You lose the intentional design. The software becomes this inscrutable black box where no single human actually knows how the components interact.
It really feels like we're repeating the mistakes of the early cloud transition. Remember when everyone thought the cloud meant you didn't have to care about infrastructure anymore? Just spin up more instances. Now it's just spin up more agents.
Right. Move fast and break things. But now on steroids, because the machine is doing the moving, the breaking, and the fixing. Hashimoto is pointing out that companies are essentially outsourcing critical engineering judgment. And if you try to question the efficacy of this AI-generated code, you just get dismissed as being resistant to progress. Oh, you just don't get the new paradigm.
Which is the psychosis part. The inability to have a rational conversation about the trade-offs. I mean, if you're shipping code without understanding it, you're building up a massive reservoir of technical debt. When that debt finally comes due, it's not going to be a simple bug fix. It'll be a systemic collapse. Imagine a scenario where a core dependency updates and the AI agent's duct tape fixes start conflicting with each other across 50 different microservices.
And the AI won't be able to fix a systemic collapse because it doesn't have that high-level semantic map of what the system was supposed to do in the first place. It only knows how to make the immediate red error text go away.
It's a warning we should take seriously. The line between being highly productive and being recklessly negligent is getting very blurry. Moving on to security, Google's Project Zero just published a write-up on a full zero-click exploit chain for the Pixel 10.
Yeah. Researchers Seth Jenkins and Jan Horn demonstrated this, and it is a stark reminder of how vulnerable our devices are, even the newest hardware platform. This exploit achieves full kernel-level control without the user doing anything.
Zero-click is always the scariest kind. The chain starts with a vulnerability in the Dolby Unified Decoder, or UDC. This is CVE-2025-54957. It gets triggered simply by the device receiving a crafted audio stream. No tapping a link, no downloading an attachment.
Right. So you receive an audio message. Your phone automatically processes it to, say, generate a notification or a transcript. And boom, the first stage is executed. That's the inherent risk of all these smart AI-powered features that automatically process media in the background. They massively expand the zero-click attack surface.
Once they get that initial foothold, the second stage targets a vulnerability in the Tensor G5 chip's VPU driver. That's the video processing unit. The flaw is in /dev/VPU, and it allows for arbitrary kernel memory read and write. This is the holy grail for an attacker, unrestricted access to the core of the operating system.
And this is where it gets interesting from a timeline perspective. This VPU vulnerability was actually reported back on November 24th, 2025. Google patched it in the February 2026 Android security update. So that's a 71-day turnaround for a patch.
Which, in the grand scheme of things, isn't terrible for a complex kernel driver flaw. But the problem is that 71 days is a long time for a zero-day to be floating around, especially one that allows arbitrary kernel read and write.
Absolutely. And the researchers noted how easily they were able to port and update an exploit from the previous generation, the Pixel 9, to the new Tensor G5 hardware. It just goes to show that complex, vendor-maintained kernel drivers remain a persistent systemic risk. These drivers are often massive legacy code bases, highly optimized for performance, but not necessarily audited for modern security threats.
They also managed to bypass the Pixel 10's Return Address Pointer Authentication, or RETPAC. They did this by targeting an initialization function called dap_cpdp_init.
Which is a brilliant piece of exploitation. RETPAC is supposed to be this major hardware-level mitigation against exactly this kind of memory corruption. It cryptographically signs return addresses to prevent attackers from hijacking control flow. But by targeting the initialization phase before the protections are fully locked in, they found a blind spot.
It really makes you question the industry trend here. We're seeing faster patching cycles, sure. 71 days is better than 6 months. But is patching fast enough when these devices are automatically parsing untrusted media all day long?
Probably not. The focus really needs to shift toward more proactive, secure-by-design driver development. Writing these VPU drivers in memory-safe languages like Rust, for instance. Because as long as we have complex C code handling media parsing before user interaction, we're going to keep seeing these zero-click chains.
For our last deep dive, let's look at an interesting issue over in the open source world that perfectly captures the current state of AI coding agents. This is an issue filed in the RTK repository. RTK stands for Rust Token Killer.
Right. RTK is a CLI proxy tool. What it does is intercept shell command outputs and compresses them before they reach your AI coding agent. The goal is to save tokens, and apparently it achieves 60 to 90% token savings.
Which is massive when you're paying per token for these large context windows. So issue 1915 is a feature request to add a specific filter for the Azure CLI, or the AZ command.
The problem is that the Azure CLI has this habit of prepending upgrade warning messages to every command output before it spits out the actual JSON result. Things like, warning, the default value for this argument will change, or please let us know how you feel about this change. Microsoft is notoriously chatty in their CLI tools because they want to ensure backward compatibility and gather telemetry.
Which is fine for a human reading a terminal. You just ignore it. But if an AI agent is running that command to fetch some state, those warning strings get fed right into the context window. They inflate the token usage on every single call.
So the proposed solution in RTK is to add a filter that uses a regex to strip out anything starting with warning colon and those continuation lines, and just preserve the actual JSON response. They also want to truncate the output at 120 characters or 50 lines for really large JSON lists. Because if you ask an agent to list all your Azure resources and it dumps a 10 megabyte JSON file into the context window, you just blew $5 on a single API call.
What's funny about this is that the Azure CLI natively supports suppressing warnings. You can use the -only show errors flag, or you can set an environment variable. az_core_only_show_errors equals true.
Exactly. So why build a custom filter into a proxy tool? I think it speaks to how developers want these AI tools to work. They don't want to have to go and reconfigure every single CLI tool on their system just to make them AI friendly. They want a middleware layer like RTK to just handle the noise automatically.
It's a fascinating shift in responsibility. We're building infrastructure specifically to manage the interface between traditional developer tools and AI agents. The AI agent expects clean JSON, the CLI tool wants to print helpful human warnings, and RTK sits in the middle as the translator.
It's almost like we're building an entirely new POSIX standard. But instead of standardizing how programs pipe text to each other, we're standardizing how programs pipe text to large language models.
It also highlights how expensive context windows still are. If developers are willing to route their entire terminal through a Rust proxy just to shave off a few warning strings, token economics are clearly a major bottleneck for agentic workflows right now.
You can have all the AI intelligence in the world, but if the raw text output of your tools is too noisy, the system grinds to a halt.
All right, let's hit a few more stories real quick in our roundup.
Sounds good. Let's clear the queue.
A. California Assembly Bill 1921, also known as the Protect Our Games Act, has passed the Assembly Appropriations Committee with an 11-2 vote on May 14th. This bill would require publishers to give 60 days notice before shutting down game servers and force them to offer a full refund or an offline patch.
The Entertainment Software Association is fighting this hard, claiming it imposes unreasonable expectations regarding licensing. But if this passes and applies to games sold after January 1st, 2027, it could fundamentally change digital ownership. Publishers might just stop selling certain live service games in California entirely to avoid the compliance headache. But gamers are exhausted by buying titles like Ubisoft's The Crew, only to have them bricked when the servers go dark.
Next up, Project Gutenberg just keeps getting better. The oldest digital library, founded back in 1971 by Michael S. Hart, now hosts nearly 78,000 free ebooks, adding 30 to 50 new items every single week.
It's an incredible volunteer effort, and they've got new leadership now, with Eric Hellman taking over as executive director at the start of 2026, following the passing of Dr. Gregory B. Newby last October. It's great to see this 501c3 nonprofit continuing its mission of plain text, open format preservation. In an era where everything is locked behind DRM and subscription paywalls, Gutenberg's commitment to truly free, offline accessible knowledge is more important than ever.
Over on GitHub, Anthropic's Claude Code desktop app has a new feature request, issue 59740, asking for a way to manually dismiss the yellow needs input state indicator. Yeah, Claude Code pauses for human confirmation on sensitive actions, which is good for safety. But if you have multiple sessions open and you've abandoned one, that persistent yellow warning becomes UI noise. Developers just want a way to clear the alert. It's a classic UI/UX problem intersecting with AI agent design. When the agent is asynchronous, the interface needs to let the human gracefully ignore it.
And sticking with Claude Code, issue 59739 points out that the slash command rename slash command doesn't work when invoked from thin clients, like the mobile app or the Claude.ai slash code web interface during a remote control synchronization layers.
Right. It just sends it as a plain user message instead of executing the local rename command on your terminal. It's a small friction point, but it shows the architectural challenges of keeping feature parity between a local CLI and remote control synchronization layers. When you're typing on your phone, you expect the slash commands to route properly to the backend daemon, not just echo into the chat log.
And that's going to do it for today's briefing. Thanks for joining us as we navigate the bleeding edge of tech.
We'll be back tomorrow with more updates. Until then, keep an eye on your token counts.
See you next time.